It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Well, what a week for news about the news. That's a good way to put it. Today, Robert Feeder reported that Ron Majors will be retiring this year. Wow. Yeah, not wow. I guess it's not surprising. I mean, he's been on the air for so long, but that's I can't imagine a Chicago news television news without Ron Majors. Yesterday, we got word that Michael Farrow was now the major shareholder for the Chicago Tribune and that he was relinquishing duties at the Sun-Times. And earlier this week, another journalist, this one with Chicago ties, caught up in a plagiarism scandal. Ken Davis is a longtime journalist and the host of Chicago Newsroom on CAN TV.
Long time.
Long time. And he's my guest tonight. Ken, good to see you.
You know, it hasn't been the same since Fahey Flynn left. I mean, let's face it. You know, I mean, Ron Majors was around for a while.
But, a little bit. So let's start with this. You know, because I read a lot of pieces about the deal with the Tribune and Michael Farrell taking over. Robert Feeder's piece was like, you know, expect a merger.
Mm-hmm.
Then you read Neil Steinberg's column in the Sun-Times. It's like, the Sun-Times is so grateful that Michael Farrell is gone,
right,
and we're ready to compete now. We are ready to be a two newspaper
yeah.
town. Which one, where are we at?
Well, obviously nobody knows, but our job is to sit here and blow hot air
right.
and pretend like
Avenue.
We do know, right?
Right, right.
All the people walking by, look, there's two experts sitting in the glass bowl. I would say that the wild card in all of this is Bruce Sagan. I mean, you know, if you read Steinberg yesterday, that was a phenomenal piece
yeah.
that Neil wrote. You know, he was the publisher of the Hyde Park Herald. He's been around in journalism for years and years and years. And suddenly he emerges as the guy. He's sort of running the
yeah.
Sun-Times.
And the candor in that he the things that he talked about to the Sun-Times mm-hmm. staff, the way he talked, oh,
uh-huh.
we got a terrible website. We're going to fix
right,
it.
Right,
you know
right.
what? Farrell's gone. Good.
Right.
We got no
right.
debt. And we're ready to rock.
Exactly.
It felt like, at least from Neil's standpoint, it right. felt like the company was a little bit invigorated.
Yeah. Now, of course, I mean, you're right. Feeder has a very different take on it. And let's face it, you know, we are all subjects of King Feeder. Whatever he says is the truth. We all of us, first thing we do is read Feeder. However, it might not be like that. I mean, there's a possibility that it's not. If Farrow has his eyes on the Tribune, my sense he's bitten off way more than he can chew. And he won't be too worried about the Sun-Times for a good long time.
For a while.
I mean, you know, when they took over the Reader, remember, it was the same thing. We were all saying, oh, my God, the Reader is going to become like an insert in the Sun-Times, right?
It hasn't happened, right.
It didn't happen, I'm sure partly because he just was too busy with everything else he had
well,
to do.
Well, do we have a pen? I mean, we... In the media circles or people who are interested in this and even listeners out there at WGN Radio, we kind of have this way of always gloom and doom in the media
mm-hmm.
in the way that, oh, they're cutting other people.
Right,
this
right.
is the end of an era, the end of one newspaper town. What are we going to do? But we saw, just like you said, with the Reader is still very strong and, mm-hmm. and doing great over there with Jake. And then you've got the Tribune, which, you know, now has Michael Farrow, which, you know, is at the top. And the Tribune's doing some great work. And the Sun-Times,
sure.
you know, for as much as how difficult that transition has been, and a lot of it had to deal with layoffs and all the kind mm-hmm. of cutbacks that the Tribune or the Sun-Times said. You know, one of the things that came out, they have no debt.
Well, it occurs to me that there's a variant on that old thing about we pundits have reported 20 of the last no collapses of the Chicago Sun-Times, you
right.
know? I mean, for, what, 30 years, we've been confidently predicting that in the next 6 months, that paper is going to go away. And somehow or other, it doesn't. And I do believe that you know, I don't want to get too patriotic here, but I really do believe that it's because of the value of the unbelievably good people who work there. And I don't work there. I have no horse
right.
in this race. But, you know, when you think about the quality of the reporting that even now is being done, you could probably be working for a startup website and have more job security than those poor folks have. But they just keep cranking it out. Despite all the layoffs, despite all the, you know, the cutbacks and the early buyouts and everything else, there's still a good core of very solid reporters and journalists. And they're still doing what I consider to be the two things that a print or a print-oriented news organization still has to do to be relevant. They have good columnists and commentary. It's still pretty solid. And the other thing is investigations. And they are still doing some of the best investigations
yeah.
in town.
Well, on the other side of the other side of, I guess, River North, the Chicago Tribune. The Chicago Tribune, Michael Farrow comes in. I mean, Michael Farrow did the job he was set out to do, which was to write the financial ship at the Chicago Sun-Times, and that was not a good for people.
Yeah.
Meaning, so many stories about layoffs, the whole photography department at the Sun-Times. If you're watching this story, or observer, or maybe working the company, are you afraid that history is going to repeat itself with the Chicago Tribune?
There's no way to know, but I guess I'm not quite as sanguine about Michael Farrow's reign at the Sun-Times as you seem to be. I mean, let's face it, there are just horror stories about a guy who came in who just frankly had no idea what he had bought and what he was about to do. And he had all of these wild, crazy ideas of things that he was going to do that he started, realized it wasn't going to work, and stopped. And here's the thing that I lay at his door. He was a digital guy. I mean, he made his hundreds of millions or whatever he did in digital, right? So he buys the Sun-Times, and you think, wow, this is exactly what they need. A guy with money and a digital background, he's going to finally fix the website. Well, I don't know if we're allowed to be this caustic on the air, but their website, I mean, it's just one of the worst websites in journalism.
It's almost becoming a fact.
it's
been talked about enough that that is true. Even the Sun-Times board, Sagan is like, yeah, it's bad.
Especially people who leave the Sun-Times the day after they leave, they'll tell you, I did all this work, I couldn't find it on my own website. But let's let that lie. There's a possibility now that this debt-free company, invigorated with somebody at the top who just is saying, come on, let's go out there and, kick butt, that they might be able to fix that website. There certainly are people in Chicago, you and I probably know 200 of them, who could fix that website. Mm-hmm. They just need a little bit of money.
I don't know much about. I mean, we had a great conversation with Jim Kirk talking about it here on the Download. And with Michael Farrow, digital doesn't mean websites. And
no,
I think that that's part of it too, is that they put a lot more effort. And Natasha Korecki talked about it today in her Politico column about a lot of the failures.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of business leaders in here, a lot of people who've worked with Michael Farrow know Michael Farrow. Yeah. Say failure is part of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you put it up and you put it down, like it doesn't work, you keep moving. So in a way, I mean, the website's bad. We know it's bad, but it does feel like startup culture. The idea of something failing and trying something new, something failing, something new.
Well, yeah, I'll go along with that partway. But the fact of the matter is that there are hundreds of really, really good news websites out there that could be emulated. And you're right, it's more than the website. It's the whole digital presence. And there again, it's so disappointing. Look at the things that they started and tried with their video, with the early and often site that they did.
The grid.
Some of these things held incredible promise, and they were doing really well, and they hired really talented people, and they were really getting somewhere. But there wasn't any. There was no follow through with it. Everything just kept collapsing all the time.
Ken Davis is the host of Chicago Newsroom on CAN TV, which is Fridays, right? Friday,
Thursdays at 6:30. Sorry,
Thursdays. Catch it online too.
And anytime at Chicago Newsroom.
He's my guest tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Let's talk about some of the other stories that are making news about news here in Chicago this week. It's a Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Ken Davis. We're talking media. A huge week. It's week in review, really. I mean, this is pretty crazy to think that there's been so many stories about the news this week.
Yeah.
I mean, Ron Majors today capped it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because we had Jay Levine in here about a week ago, and we talked about the future of 10 o'clock news.
Mm-hmm.
Because over time, you're seeing a lot of networks, even locally, put their money in the morning because now they're competing with the internet, and the 10 o'clock news is almost like too late.
Win the morning.
Yeah. But he also says that there's something great about, having the ability to have something at 10 o'clock at night that, is going to wrap up the day. But guys like Ron Majors, they've been a part of Chicago's media landscape for
there just isn't anything you can say about Ron Majors. It's sort of like there's everything else, and then there's Ron Majors in this little category by himself. He's done everything, and everything he's ever touched has been done with class and style and
number one.
Yeah, yeah. So what can one say except wow, thank you, Ron, and all the best to
now,
you.
Now, he's not, he didn't go on record, which I loved his quote in Rob Feeder's piece today, where he's like, you know, we know each other for a long time, Rob, and you know I don't talk about contracts.
Right.
So I'm like, that's so, even that's classy.
Right.
That's so nice.
Right, right.
It was a the nicest no comment I've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
On the other side of the spectrum, let's talk about some of the bigger stories that happened.
The non-Ron Major
stories. Yeah. A letter was sent up from the editor of The Intercept, which is a startup news, investigative news site, and they talked about a journalist named Juan Thompson, who they said was fabricating sources and covering up when questioned about some sources that were in his stories, most notably a brother of Dylann Roof or brother-in-law or cousin
right?
or something like that. Yeah. That said some stuff about why he would have killed people, African-Americans in that church. And they said that, you know, that may not even have been true.
That there might not even, there apparently isn't even such a person.
Yeah. And you know, it became a big story also because Juan had Chicago connections. He worked at DNA Info, and he also worked at WBEZ.
You were his mentor, I
and I was not his mentor. That mentor is a very particular word. But Juan did. I did work with Juan. He was an intern of the afternoon shift, which was a show on WBEZ, and he was there for a couple months, maybe, booking segments, putting stuff together. Never doing reporting.
I understand
like
he got
that.
Barack Obama for
it was
Barack Obama didn't show up for some reason.
No, but you know, I was like, I will say that I feel bad, you know, for what he has to go through. I'm not apologizing for what he did in any form. I mean, he's a good kid, and you know, but the bigger issue to me was the fact that he sent a letter to The Intercept's editor, and in that he said, "I'm a Cub reporter. I may make mistakes. I may be sloppy, but The Intercept didn't provide me with any editors or editorial or anything to correct my sloppy ways."
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I went back this afternoon and read the sort of founding statement on The Intercept, and it's a very broad and very high-toned thing about how they endeavor to be above all the other sites in terms of accuracy and the quality of their journalism. And of course, you know, they have Assange and, you know, they broke all that stuff. So they have some pedigree, but I think it's interesting that a new site that aspires to be what Intercept aspires to be could have this happen on their own watch.
Right.
And What that speaks to, at least initially, is I think the proliferation of sources. I mean, everybody's a content maker now, right? Everybody makes content, and so the number of gatekeepers on that content has
editors
even if
and
the
producers,
sa- even it were the same number as it was 20 years ago, it wouldn't be adequate. But in fact, that's been shrinking too. So you find even your big newspapers don't have the same fact checkers. They don't have the same editors, copy editors, and everything else as they once had. But at a site like like this one, it's kind of hard to imagine that they could have been exercising that kind of quality control.
And well, he said they weren't. That's the thing. He said that they weren't. They said that he was on his own.
But what was interesting, though, Justin, if you look at the number of stories that they've retracted or corrected, excuse me, it's a relatively small number. Most of the stories that he wrote apparently were pretty accurate. And I went back and reread the stuff that he did on the black site in Chicago, Holman Square. Mm-hmm. Now, they're mostly cribbed from other reporters, the stuff that he was doing, which
kind of aggregate style.
Yeah,
journalism.
I mean, it's almost kind of like a cheesy HuffPost in a way, because it's kind of like they just rewrite stuff from other sources.
And that's what a lot of journalists do, especially if someone is just kind of rewrite other work, right?
But you could imagine a situation like the Dylann Roof thing where, and again, these places are, you know, these are sort of like code monkey farms, I'm sure, where they're just, you know, they're just being told you got to do 15 stories a day or you're not going to get your $5, you know, per story. I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying that that's the kind of world that most young people work in today.
As we tie the whole conversation together, we just, you know, Michael Farrow, from a business standpoint, got his company to no debt at the Chicago Sun-Times. Mm-hmm. In doing so, he had to lay off I don't know what the percentage was, but it was a high percentage of people, editors, photographers, right. A lot of people that are responsible for fact-checking.
Yes.
For, and so you end up then saying, well, you could pay a journalist this much money, but we could pay him half that
right.
if they're new.
Right.
And so you do find this sort of weird kind of, you know, startup culture meets.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the problem we're seeing with what happened at The Intercept, really, is this idea that you're trusting young journalists who don't maybe don't have the experience right. to go it on their own.
You're not saying this, but we're not just using the Sun-Times as our bad example here, because every newspaper in America is doing the same thing. But yes, this is the problem. So you get a guy, you get a guy like Juan Thompson, and he's sitting there and he's got this story. He's supposed to do a story on Dylann Roof. He's got a couple of quotes he's pulled from here and there. He's supposed to embellish it with some more quotes of his own. He doesn't have time to get it, so he just makes a couple of quotes that he thinks are kind of innocuous, just generates them out of thin air. They go through the system. Nobody notices them. People read it and say, wow, that's pretty outrageous what that guy said. And it's just left at that. We have no idea how much of the stuff we consume every day is just pulled out of thin air. By the people who create it.
Oh, no.
Because we don't have the policing, you know.
Right.
So, I don't want to be an old guy who's lamenting that.
I want, for the record, Colleen Henneman, the drunk Cubs fan, is fake. I want to tell everyone on the download when she comes on, that's a character. So I don't want to be lopped into this.
Are you kidding me? I don't think I can go on. I mean, I love her.
She's very active.
I was hoping I'd meet her.
Yeah,
if I
right. You someday.
Someday. But the point to all of this, I think, is that we have these situations where this content is being generated, and it has become more than ever our responsibility to filter it for ourselves, to say what I'm reading, there's about a 40% chance that most of it is fake, and then go on to the next thing. Because, you know, it is. I mean,
that's a strong way to do it.
I just don't know what else to say. Like I said, I don't want to be one of these old guys sitting around lamenting, you know, there's no quality anymore.
No,
it's not like
I
it
think
used
that
to be.
That's a from what, Ken Davis to your ears. Everything you read, you have to bring the added. You have to bring the philosophy that 40% of this is probably not right.
Or here on the radio, except of course on the G.
Except on the G, right? Ken Davis, he hosts the Chicago Newsroom talk show on CAN TV, which you can see on Thursdays and then throughout the weekend. Also, you can find it on YouTube. He's a longtime journalist here in Chicago. Ken,
wait, there's Colleen. She's walking in.
Oh, she left. No, that was just the back of her head. And she's. Like a ghost. Ken, good to see you.
I got to talk over the tone.